This Israel Report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov, a few more snippets or another snippet regarding the 12-day war. And the information was released just over the last few days by Iranian sources, ironically, that the president of Iran was injured in an Israeli attack on Tehran during the 12-day war. In fact, on the fourth day of the war, June the 16th, we understand that there was an attack that was carried out in the western part of Tehran, and the attack managed to get access to the lower levels of a particular building, where we understand that a meeting of Iran's Supreme National Security Council was taking place in the presence of Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian. And he apparently was injured during the course of this attack. So it seems as though the Israelis targeted that meeting. It seems as though there was some intelligence about that meeting taking place in Tehran, and there was a targeted attack on that building. We understand that in addition to the president, there was also Iran's parliamentary speaker. There was their judiciary chief. There were other senior officials also meeting with the president at the time. And that after the attack, the building was badly damaged. The power was cut off. And yet the occupants of that meeting, the occupants of that room, managed somehow to escape through an emergency hatch and got out alive, which really puts an entirely different spin on the war, because one could wonder what might have happened if the president had been killed in that attack. And of course, it was very, very low key. Clearly, the Iranians didn't want anybody to know that their president had been injured or the fact that he'd even been targeted. But now, since it's come out, there is a renewed kind of feeling of requirement to take revenge for that attack. So even though he wasn't killed, and even though that took place ages ago, the Iranians have come out very, very belligerently with this information to try and save, I guess, a little bit of face, to find some way to save their self-respect, because of course this is a lot about honor, that the Israelis managed to target their president and even managed to injure him in the legs in the course of that attack, and yet nothing was said, nothing was done. There was no revenge call. The black flags were not hoisted specifically because of that attack against the president. But that might have changed a lot of what happened in the days after that. I just wondered to myself what might have happened if he had been killed in that attack.
Yeah, and how that would have potentially changed the war or changed the course of the way in which it was being fought. Very, very interesting information. The terrible news that three IDF soldiers killed inside their tank in northern Gaza yesterday. What do we know about this?
Well, this is an incident that took place in Jabalia, and we understand that a rocket-propelled grenade somehow found its way into the tank, inside the tank. And when you think about the tank, I mean, a tank is designed to be safe for its occupants. I mean, obviously, it has a role to play as an artillery vehicle, but it's supposed to protect the people who are inside, who are going into the heat of a battle zone. And yet, on this occasion, unfortunately, that tank proved to be a death trap for the three soldiers who died inside there, and one, a commander in the armored brigade who was very, very severely injured. And ironically, one of the soldiers who was killed in that tank has a father who was a prisoner of war in the Yom Kippur War and had been released as a prisoner of war. His son was in that tank in Gaza and he was killed yesterday. And these incidents are beginning to mount and really beginning to create a certain burden on our society, because there isn't the heat of the battle that we experienced in the first days of this war. Now there is a much greater deal of control around Gaza, our ability to maneuver much more safely, much less intensity in the war that's going on in Gaza, and yet our casualties are continuing to mount. Some of those casualties due to accidents, some of them due to some sort of poor actions that are being taken by our soldiers, not correct procedures that are being followed or whatever it is. The way in which a rocket-propelled grenade might find its way into a tank is clearly something, a discussion that needs a little bit of examination, and an incident that needs some further examination, because that is really quite a serious incident. And of course, once again, our hearts break for the losses that we experience. These three young men, all in their early 20s, come from different walks of life, come from different parts of Israel, come from different types of families, all thrown together in that tiny space in the tank, and they've created a bond between themselves. They have to live there. They have to do the most personal things, because tank crews don't have an opportunity to go to the toilet anywhere or to go and eat somewhere. They all sit in their tank. They sleep there. They do everything that they need to do in the tank with their friends. They create a certain bond, and that's unfortunately how they were killed yesterday. So once again, our hearts are very broken indeed. And I'd like to also mention that there was also another casualty yesterday for the IDF, and that was a soldier at a northern base who committed suicide. This is the third soldier to commit suicide in the IDF in the last 10 days. And we can't ignore this aspect of tragedy that is unfolding within the IDF, where soldiers are committing suicide. And when we think about what the factors are that might contribute to this, clearly those young soldiers are going out and witnessing atrocities which no person of their age should need to witness. Their friends are being killed and maimed, and they are living under extremely dangerous conditions, and they are constantly under attack. They experience fear and lack of convenience about the way in which they have to conduct their lives. That is an extremely, extremely stressful situation. And psychologically, we have a nation now who are suffering from post-traumatic stress, even those people who haven't been in Gaza, but how much more so those who have been in Gaza and witnessed the actions and witnessed the hate and the evil that one sees when one goes into battle in Gaza. So that's the first thing that we need to think about. The second thing, which is not less important, is that many of our soldiers who have completed their three-year training are being told now that they need to stay on for another 9 to 12 months because we are short of soldiers in our army, and we are requiring them. They are being forced to stay on in their period of national service in order to make up the numbers which we are currently short of. And many of the soldiers, in fact, most of the soldiers would do so gladly, but some of them experience severe psychological stress as a result of having looked forward to the moment when they can finally get away from that battle zone, take a little bit of a well-earned break, and then they are told, I'm sorry, you have to stay on for another 9 to 12 months. And that comes against the backdrop of this battle that's been going on in the Knesset about the recruitment of young Haredi men and women, ultra-Orthodox men and women to the army, and the fight of the ultra-Orthodox parties to keep those young men and women out of the army when we really need them. This is two sides of the same argument. We are short of manpower in our army. We have a community who have numbers, who are able to contribute. Their leadership has decided for one reason or another that they wish to fight almost to the end in order to prevent their young people from being recruited to the army, and yet we need their numbers desperately, and we have these suicides going on, and there are more than one or two people in Israel who are turning around to the ultra-Orthodox community and saying, do you see those young soldiers who are committing suicide? Let their lives be on your conscience, because if you allowed your young people to join the army and to make up the numbers that are really needed, then those young people would not be required at the last minute to extend their service and therefore to suffer the psychological stress that comes with it, and chas v'chalila, God forbid, have to resort to committing suicide because of the immense, immense psychological strain that they're suffering. So this is a really serious issue for us. We need the manpower, and if the ultra-Orthodox parties really had Israel's best interests at heart, then they would allow their young people to join the army to make up the numbers and to do what's required in order to defend our country. We need everybody to participate. And at the moment, unfortunately, the burden is not being evenly shared.
It's a really, really tough one. It is, and to watch young people so impacted that this is the choice that they ultimately make is just horrific. Anthony, let's just talk about what's happening with regard to the IDF and getting involved with the Druze and Sunni in southern Syria. Why would Israel get involved in this?
Well, it's an interesting discussion because what's going on in southern Syria at the moment is that essentially Syrian government forces are attacking the Druze. So the Syrian government forces, which are, for all intents and purposes, Sunni Muslims, are attacking the Druze in southern Syria. And that fighting has escalated quite significantly. And in fact, the Minister of Defense, Israel Katz, has come out publicly saying that Israel will not allow Syrian government forces to attack the Druze. And the question is, why? Why does Israel have the interest to defend the Druze and to go out and deploy the IDF and to deploy Israel's air force in order to protect the Druze, who are located not only in southern Syria, but of course they straddle the border between Israel and Syria, such that there are many members of the community who are Israeli citizens living in Israel on the northern border, just south of where the Druze are being attacked in southern Syria right now. And the reason really comes in two pieces. First of all, that Israel has generally done everything it can to support its Druze community. The Druze have been loyal citizens of Israel, and there is a certain pact that has been agreed upon between the Druze community in northern Israel and the Israeli government that they will do everything to defend not only the Druze who live in Israel, but indeed members of their family, because let's not forget that the Druze that were separated on each side of the border were separated by somebody's pencil line that was drawn through the Druze community in that area to cause that community to be split in two, some of them in Syria and some of them in Israel. And so the Israeli Druze have managed to get from the government an undertaking that they would do everything to protect their fellow Druze citizens, fellow members of their families, friends, who are located in southern Syria if they come under attack. And that's exactly what's been happening right now. So the Israeli government has been true to its word to defend the Druze as much as it possibly can. Of course, there is another aspect to this. And the other aspect is, to the extent that the Syrian government forces are moving in tanks and moving in other military equipment to that southern Syria area, it presents something of a threat to Israel. So the Israeli, the IDF has its interest to make sure that heavy military equipment doesn't come into that area where the Druze are located in southern Syria. And so that's why, for example, yesterday, Israeli UAVs and drones were attacking military equipment, tanks, Syrian tanks that were moving towards the Druze area. First of all, to defend the
and second of all, to make sure that that equipment doesn't land up on Israel's northern border. So that is going to continue as far as I can see, because those battles are quite fierce and quite a number of people have been killed. But ultimately, the IDF, and of course, as I've said, the Minister of Defense has made some public statements about this, that they will do everything that they can to defend the Druze in southern Syria.
With not a lot of time to spare, but I do want to talk about this. Israel launched a new satellite into space on Sunday. What do we know about the satellite? Anthony, are you still with us? Oh, gosh. And Anthony, I think I can hear you now. Nope, I absolutely cannot. We don't have time for that story. We're going to hold it over until tomorrow. Israel did launch a new satellite into space. That took place on Sunday. And tomorrow we'll discuss with Anthony a little bit more about that initiative. It is about to go 8 o'clock. That was the Israel Report. You can catch Anthony tomorrow morning at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands.